Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are attempting something pretty ambitious.
Definitely.
We're tackling Edward Gibbon's monumental work, The History of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, it's huge. 6 volumes. Took him over 20 years to write.
It really is the definitive autopsy of a civilization, isn't it? Gibbon spent, well, a huge chunk of his life trying to answer this one massive question.
Which still feels relevant today.
Absolutely. How did this seemingly invincible empire, the most powerful, most sophisticated in the ancient world, just gradually fall apart?
And that word gradually is key, isn't it? It wasn't, you know, one battle, one bad emperor.
Oh, no. Gibbon traces it over 13 centuries. It's this long, slow grind.
So for you listening, this isn't just dusty old history. It's like a masterclass in how civilizations work, or maybe how they stop working.
Right. It's full of warnings about internal problems, political stability, the whole life cycle of power. If you want to understand how great things can fail, Gibbon is probably the place to start.
Okay, so let's start with the man himself, Edward Gibbon. What was it about him, about his background, that sort of prepared him for this massive undertaking?
Well, Gibbon, born 1737, he was very much a figure of the Enlightenment, the 18th century. And crucially, he wasn't a university academic in the modern sense. He was a gentleman scholar.
Meaning he had the time and the money.
Exactly. He had the intellectual drive, but also the financial independence to dedicate, like you said, over 2 decades just to this one single project. Imagine that focus.
And the inspiration story is famous, right? His trip to Rome.
Yeah, it's almost legendary. 1764, he's in Rome, apparently sitting among the ruins on the Capitoline Hill, thinking about all this lost glory.
Huh.
And right there, the idea hits him. Trace the story of how it all came undone.
That context, being there, but also his Enlightenment thinking.
Yeah.
That shaped his approach, didn't it?
Hugely. He wasn't looking for divine intervention or miracles. He wanted natural explanations, human actions, political mistakes, cultural shifts, you know, basic human folly.
But applying that enlightened rationalism.
Yes. Systematic critical analysis. Trying to explain history through cause and effect, things you could observe, not just attributing it to fate or God's will.
And he could really write. People talk about his style.
Oh, absolutely. He's considered one of the greatest prose stylists in English. His writing is elegant, often quite ironic, very commanding. He takes this incredibly dense history and somehow makes it, well, compelling, almost readable like a novel in parts.
A tragic epic, maybe.
That's a good way to put it.
All right, let's dive into the book itself then, the scope.
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling. 13 centuries.
Yep. Starts at the very height of Roman power, the 2nd century AD, the time of the Antonine emperors.
The so-called good emperors.
Right. And it goes all the way to the final fall of Constantinople in 1453. It covers the entire arc.
So if you had to boil down that massive narrative, 13 centuries of detail, what's the core argument? What's Gibbon's main idea?
The central point is that collapse wasn't sudden. It wasn't one single event. It was a slow, drawn-out process.
A decline, then a fall.
Exactly. Driven by what he calls a confluence of interconnected factors. But he famously boils it down to 2 main corrosive forces, barbarism and religion.
And he really emphasizes the internal problems, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He seems less focused on the invaders outside the gates.
Well, they matter, but he argues they could only succeed because Rome was already weakening from within.
How so?
He points to the loss of what the Romans called civic virtue, military discipline, that kind of public spirit. And alongside that, the corrosive effects of, as he saw it, Christianity.
Right, the religion part of his famous phrase.
Mm-hmm. And this ties into his idea of the paradox of immoderate greatness.
Immoderate greatness. What does that mean?
Gibbon argues that the empire's sheer size, its incredible wealth, its overwhelming power, these things that made it seem so strong, they actually contained the seeds of its own destruction. The size made it impossible to govern effectively. The wealth led to corruption and decadence. The power meant the military became too dominant and eventually relied on outsiders.
So its success bred the conditions for its failure.
Precisely. It became too big, too complex, too wealthy for its own good, leading to internal rot, political instability, and ultimately military weakness.
Okay, so if immoderate greatness planted the seeds, where did Gibbon first see them starting to sprout? Let's walk through the phases he lays out. Phase 1, the first cracks appear. roughly 98 to 284 AD.
Right. He actually starts with what he calls the happiest age in human history, the time of the five good emperors, people like Marcus Aurelius, competent, virtuous rulers.
Sounds pretty good. So where's the problem?
Even then, Given points out a fundamental structural weakness. There was no clear constitutional way to choose the next emperor. Succession was always a potential crisis point. And when Marcus Aurelius, the philosopher king, chose his own incompetent and cruel son, Commodus, to succeed him, that's when things really start to go downhill.
And the army steps in.
The power of the army, especially the Praetorian Guard in Rome, becomes immense and unchecked. After Commodus is assassinated, the situation deteriorates rapidly.
This leads into the infamous crisis of the 3rd century.
Exactly. This period is crucial for Gibbon's argument about institutional failure. You get the barracks, emperors, generals, seizing power, civil war, constant instability.
It sounds terrifying. How bad was it?
Just to give you an idea, in the 50 years between 235 and 294 AD, there were something like 20 official emperors, maybe more depending on how you count.
20 emperors in 50 years.
Yeah, and almost all of them were murdered, usually by their own soldiers. It's complete military anarchy. That kind of chaos doesn't just slow things down, it starts to unravel the very fabric of society.
Okay, so that's the crisis. Then, phase two, around 284 to 395 AD, we see attempts to fix things.
Right. Radical autocratic fixes. First, Diocletian tries to restore order by basically splitting the empire into four parts of tetrarchy and ruling with an iron fist.
Did it work?
Temporarily stabilized things, but it fundamentally changed the nature of Roman rule. More autocratic, less connected to the old republic ideals.
And then comes Constantine.
Yes, Constantine reunites the empire, moves the capital east to a new city, Constantinople.
Which becomes Byzantium later on.
Exactly. And crucially, he embraces Christianity. This is a pivotal moment for Gibbon.
And this is where his analysis gets really controversial, even today. Because many people would say Christianity actually helped hold things together later on.
That's the debate, isn't it? Gibbon doesn't necessarily deny that the church became a stable institution, especially in the West as the civil government crumbled, but he analyzes its rise and impact very differently.
How so? From a purely sort of political, social perspective.
Yes. He argues Christianity succeeded due to things like its zealous intolerance of rivals, its strong community organization, and of course, the powerful appeal of salvation and an afterlife.
But he saw a downside for the empire itself.
He did. He argued that its focus on the next world, on heavenly rewards, diverted talent and energy away from the urgent tasks of this world, things like military service, political administration.
So the virtues it promoted, humility, forgiveness, turning the other cheek, he saw those as incompatible with running a giant, often brutal empire.
That's his argument, that these passive virtues, as he saw them, were kind of antithetical to the active martial spirit needed to defend Roman borders and maintain imperial control. Great for the individual soul, perhaps, but corrosive to the state's power.
And the internal disuse didn't help either, I suppose.
He points that out too. Endless theological arguments, councils fighting over doctrines. He saw it as consuming vital energy that Rome desperately needed to deal with, actual barbarians at the gates.
Which brings us neatly to phase three, the Western collapse, roughly 395 to 476 AD. The internal hollowing out makes it vulnerable.
Now, the external pressure really ramps up and it finds Rome weak. You get relentless waves of
The
incursion.
famous ones.
Right. The Visigoths under Alaric actually sack the city of Rome in 410, a huge psychological blow. The Vandals take North Africa, a vital grain supply. Attila the Hun rampages across Europe. The borders are just collapsing.
But Gibbon's main point here isn't just the barbarians were strong.
No. His crucial argument is that the West didn't fall because the barbarians were inherently superior. It fell because Rome itself was internally broken.
So.
Its leadership was often corrupt or incompetent. Its armies were increasingly filled with barbarian mercenaries who had little loyalty to Rome itself. And perhaps most importantly, the Roman citizens themselves had lost the will, the virtus, to fight and die for the empire.
They outsourced their own defense.
Effectively, yes. So when the last Western Roman emperor, a young boy named Romulus Augustulus, was quietly deposed by a Germanic general in 476 AD,
It wasn't this dramatic, fiery end.
Gibbon portrays it as almost anticlimactic. The inevitable end of a long, slow process of decay that had been going on for centuries. The structure was already gone. This was just removing the figurehead.
But the story isn't over. Rome continues in the east, Byzantium. This is phases four through six. Basically the next 1,000 years, right?
Yeah.
Up to 1453.
Exactly. The focus shifts entirely to Constantinople. And you see cycles repeating in a way. You get figures like Justinian in the 6th century.
He's famous for the law code, Hagia Sophia.
Right. And huge military campaigns led by his general Belisarius to try and reconquer the West. Impressive stuff.
But Gibbon sees a downside again.
Yeah, he argues these glorious achievements were ultimately Pyrrhic victories. They cost an enormous amount in money and manpower, completely exhausting the Eastern Empire's resources,
leaving it vulnerable to the next big threat,
which was the incredibly rapid expansion of Islam in the 7th century. It strips the Byzantine Empire of its wealthiest southern provinces, Egypt, Syria, North Africa, a massive permanent blow.
And the Byzantium struggles on for centuries, facing threats from all sides. But Gibbon points to a specific fatal wound inflicted not by outsiders, but by fellow Christians.
Yes, this is maybe one of the most tragic ironies. The Fourth Crusade in 1204, Western European crusaders, supposedly on their way to the Holy Land, get diverted and end up sacking Constantinople itself.
Sacking the greatest Christian city in the world.
Unbelievable. It was an act of shocking betrayal, and Gibbon argues it fatally crippled the Byzantine state. It never truly recovered its former strength after that.
Setting the stage for the final act.
The final act. The steady, relentless rise of the Ottoman Turks. They gradually encircle Constantinople over decades.
Until the final siege in 1453.
Led by Sultan Mehmed II. A dramatic siege, the use of massive cannons, and finally the city falls. That is the definitive end. The last vestige of the Roman Empire is gone, almost 1,500 years after Augustus.
Wow. What a sweep of history. Gibbon really does structure it like this epic tragedy.
It does. And his genius lies in making sense of that vast timeline, drawing out these recurring themes and lessons.
Okay, let's pull out some of those key themes. We've touched on them, but let's crystallize them. Theme number one, the loss of Virtus.
Right. That Roman ideal of courage, discipline, public duty, devotion to the state. Gibbon shows how centuries of peace, prosperity, and what he saw as luxury slowly eroded this.
Complacency set in.
Yeah, citizens preferred comfort over duty. They became unwilling to serve in the army, leading to reliance on those foreign mercenaries. It hollows out the empire from the inside. Decadence is the precursor to defeat, in his view.
Theme two, immoderate greatness, that paradox we mentioned.
The sheer size was an insoluble problem. How do you effectively govern such a vast, diverse territory without creating a massive, expensive, and inevitably corrupt bureaucracy?
It would be to succeed.
In a way, yes. It led to division, rivalry between different parts of the empire, and the center just couldn't hold it all together effectively or affordably. It collapsed under its own weight.
Theme three. The destructive influence of new ideology, his controversial take on Christianity.
Yeah, revisiting that point. Gibbon argued its focus on the afterlife, on heavenly rewards, essentially diverted crucial talent and energy away from the state's immediate earthly needs like defense and governance.
Promoting passive virtues instead of active ones needed for empire.
That was his perspective. Humility, patience, forgiveness, great spiritual values perhaps, but not, in his view, the ones that maintain a sprawling, often ruthless empire.
And finally, a theme I really find fascinating throughout the book, the irony of history.
Oh, he loves this. Gibbon constantly points out how actions lead to unintended, often opposite consequences.
Like how?
Like the peace and prosperity under the good emperors breeding the very softness that later enabled the decline. Or Justinian's glorious reconquest bankrupting the state and leaving it weaker.
So history isn't neat or logical?
Not according to Gibbon. It's driven by human folly, by contradictions, by unintended outcomes. It's messy, complex, and deeply ironic.
And Gibbon expresses these complex ideas with such memorable language. His quotes really stick with you. Let's share a few.
Okay. Well, the one that perfectly captures his rather skeptical view of humanity is, history is indeed little more than the register of the crimes, follies, and misfortunes of mankind.
Oof, that's pretty bleak.
It is. Reflects that Enlightenment pessimism, perhaps.
Then there's the one summarizing that core problem of scale. The decline of Rome was the natural and inevitable effect of immoderate greatness.
Right. Makes it sound almost like a physical law, doesn't it? That success itself contains the seeds of failure when it gets too big.
And the most famous summary of his whole argument.
Has to be. I have described the triumph of barbarism in religion. That's his two-pronged thesis in one stark sentence.
But he wasn't a total fatalist, was he? There's a quote, suggesting agency still matters.
Ah, yes. The winds and waves are always on the side of the ablest navigators.
Meaning
even when facing huge historical forces, strong leadership, competence, and skill can still make a difference. You might not be able to change the storm, but a good captain can navigate it better.
That's a slightly more hopeful note, maybe.
A little bit. It suggests that while systems might decay, individual choices and abilities still count for something.
Okay, that leads us nicely into the practical side. Why should you, listening now, care about the fall of Rome all these centuries later? What are the real-life applications? Application one seems clear, the danger of complacency.
Absolutely. Gibbon hammers this home. Rome's decline started arguably when it was at its peak. Success is never guaranteed.
So for us today, whether personally or in business or even nationally.
Right. Don't assume past success guarantees future survival. You have to stay vigilant against internal decay. What's the modern equivalent of losing Virtus in a company? Maybe focusing only on short-term profits and neglecting long-term health, innovation, or employee morale.
Yeah, good point. Application two, the need for strong, adaptable institutions.
We saw how the breakdown of political institutions, like a clear succession process, led directly to the chaos of the third century. It's a powerful reminder that things like democratic norms, the rule of law, checks and balances, they're not guaranteed.
They're fragile.
Very fragile. They require constant effort, defense, and adaptation to survive. When they erode, instability and chaos tend to fill the void.
And application three,
mm-hmm.
Recognizing the slow nature of decline.
Yeah, this is important. Rome didn't fall overnight. It took centuries. Gibbon teaches us to look beyond the immediate crisis, the daily headlines.
And focus on the long-term trends.
Exactly. Those seemingly small problems may be growing inequality or bureaucratic inefficiency or the erosion of trust if they're left unaddressed, they can slowly eat away at the foundations. Then, when a big shock does hit, the whole thing can collapse much faster than anyone expected.
So, bringing it all together,
mm-hmm.
What's the ultimate profound takeaway from Gibbon?
I think it's his core argument, really. Great civilizations aren't usually murdered from the outside. They more often die by suicide.
Meaning internal problems are the real killer.
Yes. External threats, the barbarians, only succeed when the society is already weakened from within by that loss of civic virtue, by political division, by moral decay, by institutional failure. The internal rot comes first.
And the value of reading Gibbon, or at least understanding his argument today.
It's timeless because it's a deep meditation on power, success, and failure. What makes Gibbon unique is that combination, meticulous historical detail, absolutely stunning literary style, and this sharp, skeptical, analytical mind.
It forces you to think critically.
It really does. It encourages you to look critically at your own society, your own institutions, your own beliefs and values. Are we maintaining our own virtus? Are we managing our own form of immoderate greatness? Are our core ideologies helping or hindering us?
It's the ultimate historical challenge to complacency, isn't it? If an empire that lasted for 1,500 years could ultimately crumble from within.
Yeah. What illusions of permanence are we holding on to today? It forces you to confront the reality that even the most impressive human creations need constant renewal, constant recommitment to the things that actually sustain them.
A sobering but vital lesson. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.